Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
This is Van Hipp, Chairman of American Defense International and author of The New Terrorism, How to Fight It and Defeat It. And you're listening today to my friend Audrey Russo on Real Talk.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. So, the anti-Trump coup parties continue to grow. Does this even reach the Kremlin? And, amazingly, part of the immunity deal for Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson included the destruction of their laptops. But the laptops survived. What now? Well, we're going to discuss this and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. She's a former nationally syndicated conservative American columnist whose blog is one of Newsmax's 50 best conservative blogs, and it tackles controversial subjects such as the impact of Islam and the failures of counterinsurgency. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She has also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media, and she can be read at The Daily Caller. Diana is also a popular analyst and contributor on both radio and TV. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West. Welcome back and Happy New Year, Diana.
Happy New Year to you too, Audrey.
And we're looking forward to a good one. Hopefully.
Yes.
Lots of indictments.
Hopefully.
Lots of indictments.
It's still early enough to hope for it anyway, so I'm with you.
So, why don't we jump right in here with, as I mentioned, with the mounting evidence of, collusion against Trump, including the DNC, the deep state, Obama, Hillary, et al. While the media is busy obsessing over the president's Diet Coke habits, can you tell us, is it possible that a red thread runs through the anti-Trump coup?
Yes, well, this is something I'm exploring, and that is, in fact, the name of a series I've started at my website, dianawest.net. We are looking at something in terms of essentially living through this attempted coup against the incoming president. I don't see any other way to try to even understand the events of the past year or so. But when we look at it, it's such an outrageous event. It involves so many people, inside the government, inside the Obama White House, inside the intelligence agencies, inside the Justice Department, and so on, the FBI. To this day, we have many of the same officials who are still in their positions as we watch all of this unspool. And it suddenly occurred to me as I was trying to, you know, straining my brain, even trying to wrap my head around what's going on and trying to make sense of it, it's such an extraordinary set of circumstances that this is absolutely not politics as usual. Think about it. When we think about presidential politics, when we shift from one party to another, America has this beautiful history of peaceful transitions of power, which isn't to say that the other side, you know, is happy about losing power, or that the various bureaucracies and political appointees and so on are not constantly doing everything in their power for next time to mount their next campaign and to get power back, take the country in their direction. I mean, that's part of what we are. That's part of what the democracy is. And yet, when we look at what we've already seen brought to light in part through Judicial Watch's efforts, through the efforts of a handful of very valiant and wonderful congressmen, including Representative Gates and Jim Jordan and some others, we're looking at something that is absolutely foreign to our system, namely the sense of creating a dossier that would be used to investigate the presidential, or actually candidate Trump's team and then incoming presidential administration. These are the kinds of things that are completely foreign to our system. So my question begins with, if this is not politics as usual, if this is not normal domestic Republican Democratic Party politics as usual, what are we looking at? We're way past the dissolution of the Soviet Union. We're supposed to be way past the Cold War. We have gotten used to the idea that we don't have really ideological enemies, that we don't have to worry about communism and Marxism, that we don't have to worry about the subversion of our system. We've seen how that's played out in the post-9/11 era when we're not allowed to really explore the realities of Islam. And so my wheels just started turning in terms of wondering, is there something here that we're missing, that's hidden, that we've learned not to analyze? And so this is sort of the genesis of this series. I'll be putting up part two shortly, I hope this week. And in part one, I essentially lay out how abnormal these conditions are and try to start examining the players and really where they're coming from. And I think the place where we're going to learn the most is in that nexus of the Justice Department and the FBI and Fusion GPS, the opposition research firm. And indeed, what we learned in December, and maybe some people missed it because we were getting close to Christmas and holidays, we learned that a couple, a married couple, Bruce Orr and Nellie H. Orr, Bruce Orr being a Justice Department official, Nellie Orr being a Russian scholar, an employee of GPS, or Fusion GPS, I should say, while her husband was secretly meeting with GPS Fusion figures and Steele dossier, et cetera, these two people were kind of at the nexus of a lot of what was going on in terms of the basis for a lot of what we've seen unfold that seems to me to be an attempted coup. I know that's a very serious term. Oh. I don't know how else to describe it, but essentially that's what we're looking at, and that's what I'm trying to zero in on as we sort of turn the corner on the new year.
Right. With, of course, a red thread, of course, I'm referring to the Kremlin, but it's really not that far-fetched because, if anything, Putin would rather have seen Hillary in than Trump. Do you agree?
Yes, I do agree, and I felt that way since this entire narrative first surfaced. I actually started writing, just noticing it, when it popped up, because you started seeing certain columnists, Anne Applebaum in the Washington Post, and Franklin Foer, I believe it was, perhaps at Slate, or I may be mistaken at where he first was writing, but this notion that Trump, candidate Trump, in high summer 2016, right when a lot of this was coalescing behind the scenes for the most part, we didn't know much about it yet, that candidate Trump was the Kremlin's man, was the Kremlin puppet, was Putin's puppet, was like a Russian oligarch. All of these catchphrases that were very damaging started to pop up in about July 2016 in the media. And I remember it hurt my head right from the start, because if you just look at what candidate and President Trump want to do, for example, about improving, enlarging, modernizing America's nuclear arsenal, that in and of itself would be reason for Vladimir Putin to oppose, to hope that Donald Trump would not get in office. That right there becomes a huge problem for him when he has a history with the Clintons. Hillary Clinton, for example, having been instrumental in the export, really the wholesale moving of American technology to a place called Skolkovo, a sort of Silicon Valley that she and then President Medvedev cooked up during the Obama reset period, that would essentially update and modernize Russian technology, including nuclear technology, and we find including military technology.
Wow.
I mean, this is very, very serious unexplored scandal, Skolkovo. So just on those two points alone, who would you rather have in power? Someone who's been working basically in tandem with you on things that you want, namely Hillary Clinton and Skolkovo and many other things, or this outsider, this upstart, someone who comes from you don't even know where, who wants to do something as crazy as increase and modernize Americans' nukes. So, yes, I think you're exactly right. So that right away was a twist when we started hearing, no, this man is Putin's puppet. So right away, it didn't really sit well with me. And I study this stuff. I've been steeped in it for some years now in trying to understand how these messaging, these disinformation campaigns get started. And so this, to me, was exactly one such. So when you see everything else that we've started to pull together, coming together to really push the idea that there was a frame-up, essentially, of Donald Trump, created by his political enemies in both parties of the swamp, the establishment, the uniparty, inside and outside of official Washington, but basically inside this Beltway area, it becomes very meaningful to try to understand if there's a larger dimension here. I haven't nailed it yet. I don't claim to know, but I'm starting to understand how important it is at least to reflect on it, because one of the things we lost when the Soviet Union dissolved was the notion of an enemy, an ideological enemy, and a deceptive ideological enemy. And this, amazingly, was actually something that Soviet officials planned. And this would go back to the kind of astonishing discussions of this by a man named Arbatov, who was a very key figure in Soviet disinformation policy making, if you can call it that, who actually talked about how they were going to be taking away our concept of an enemy. Well, that's a very fascinating idea that we could probably talk about for hours, but it is something that was at the top of their minds, and it's something that we can look back on and say they successfully did, because people don't even think about Russia in ideological terms, even as, for example, we still have Lenin in his tomb right in the middle of Moscow. And much more importantly, we still see all manner of support and collective activity with communist regimes around the world, socialist communist regimes around the world, with Russia, whether it's in Venezuela or parts of Africa, on and on. So you don't see sort of the international dimension of the Soviet Union abating. You see it changing. And there were a lot of great thinkers who kind of have looked at this and projected this, and they have sort of been pushed aside. I think it's very important that we at least consider the possibility that we are once again engaged in a gross but brilliant campaign of deception. Once again, that again seems to go outside the normal strictures of American politics. And so it's just sort of a thought experiment. We'll see where it goes. But I think it's certainly worth thinking about, because I can't really explain things in what we would think of as normal terms. This is very weird, a weird period.
Yeah, it is. I look forward to seeing what you find in your research on this. And I encourage the listeners, of course, I'll have that information at the end, to follow this series, because Diana's work is impeccable when it comes to research. It really is. You know, Diana, Joe DeGeneva said on the David Webb show recently that despite the FBI agreeing to destroy the laptops of Clinton aide Cheryl Mills and ex-campaign staffer Heather Samuelson as part of an immunity deal made during the initial investigation of Clinton's email server, agents involved in the case refused to destroy the laptops. Now, DeGeneva said that laptops had already been subpoenaed and the FBI is waiting for Congress to ask for them. So, Diana, why in the world would destroying these laptops be part of an immunity deal?
Right. Well, it's a very shocking thought if you're looking at a good faith investigation conducted by the highest federal law enforcement agency, the FBI. If you're looking at a fix, if you're looking at political favors, if you're looking at a completely corrupt system, which all the evidence we're getting to date regarding these matters points to, it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, this is one outrageous instance that comes out of we've got all manner of data points that show that this was not a good faith investigation, including right up to former Director Comey's decision to change it from an investigation to a matter, not even to put these interviews, including with Hillary Clinton, on the record. I mean, this was never anything but a political launch or protection for a political launch of the Democratic candidate. So that's why we're looking at something of such abnormality. I don't think we've ever seen something this blatant. And again, when you have to always kind of have at the back of your mind, we were not supposed to see this because no one expected Donald Trump to win. Mm-hmm. If Hillary Clinton had come into office on January 20th, 2017, everything would have been as bleached as her server. None of this would have come out. Maybe Judicial Watch would have been able to pull out some things or what have you, but it would have just sort of sat in a pile somewhere. There would be no hope of connecting it. Even now, the forces against truly airing it, against truly having a full-fledged investigation, are so strong that I think chances are we will not get to the bottom of it. It really requires a major push. I was very happy to see Senator Lindsey Graham, who's not one of my favorite senators, but he was speaking very forthrightly about the need to have a new independent counsel to look into the Steele dossier per se, because he said that was outside of independent counsel Bob Mueller's purview. How that dossier, or rather how the FISA court even was activated to start spying on the Trump people, to start unmasking the Americans involved in the Trump campaign, how that all came about is something he was intimating was closely linked to this dossier that GPS Fusion and that the Oars and so on were involved in, and the former MI6 agent Christopher Steele, etc. He was strongly intimating that it was the dossier that triggered this whole FISA court action, and that it was so disturbing to him, it did require an independent counsel at least to come in and let us know what really went on. That probably is the most important piece of this at this moment, and I hope he doesn't forget that. I hope that he continues with that and sees to it that his colleagues support him on this, because I think we do not have a hope of understanding this until we really get as much information out there as possible. And certainly how that dossier was essentially, I believe Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch says, laundered by the FBI into, is essentially a Democratic Party-funded document.
Wow.
And it was laundered by the FBI, according to this theory, in order to become an intelligence document that would then be taken up by the FISA court, which would then approve the whole idea of essentially domestic surveillance on the incoming presidential team. So this candidate, then presidential team. So this becomes crucial to understand if that's true. Is that true? We have to find out. Because if that's true, we really are looking at an attempted coup. We really are potentially looking at crimes of treason. I mean, this is that serious. And again, the forces against even thinking out loud about this in these terms, and I would say Joe DeGeneva has been supremely concentrating the mind with the language he as a lawyer has been using in terms of calling this, he believes it's a frame-up of the incoming Trump presidency. This is huge, and I don't know that people, you know, really are able to wrap their minds around it because, you know, the echo chamber out there is certainly pushing against it. So it's wonderful to talk about it with you, frankly, because it really, really bothers me. And it's something that I think people need to at least consider, imagine, discuss, look into, analyze, and really get the facts out there. And if we're wrong, if it isn't as bad as it looks, wonderful. But if it is as bad as it looks, that requires a lot of action, and that requires a lot of concentration and courage.
Oh, absolutely, courage. And I think there's just a few, there might be just enough to bring more and more out on this. And of course, I know that a lot of whoever's preventing some of this from happening is because the Clintons are still behind, Hillary's still behind that because it's going to lead to her. But, you know, Comey, just more and more revelations. This man is just a dirty cop. That's the only way to put it. Him making an immunity deal that included the laptops being destroyed. And of course, we can't forget that he wrote that speech that he had given 2 months before he even interviewed, where he was clearing Hillary before he interviewed. What is that? That, to me, is almost criminal.
Well, I think it must. I don't know the law, but I would certainly not be surprised if there is a statute against such things. I mean, but you have to also understand that James Comey's career goes back a long way with the Clintons, and so you know this becomes another line of research that once it becomes known or understood, a lot of these things make a lot more sense, you know, but it's the kind of thing where, we've seen so many failures on the part of our senior officials who are supposed to be vetting people, who are supposed to be, you know, watching this kind of thing, who are supposed to be maintaining the law and upholding the Constitution. I mean, it's not just these actors. We have a lot of corruption across the board, and it really kind of, you know, there really has to be kind of a remoralization of our political world that is quite all encompassing, because so much of this just goes back to basics about right and wrong, holding people accountable, responsibility, the Constitution. I mean, all of these things that over time have been incredibly abused. And so you know, it's a big project, and it's very hard for people, including journalists trying to cover it, even honest journalists trying to cover it. There's so much. It's just, you know, you mentioned the laptops. That's just like one terrible thing, but there's so many others. So it's a big story, and, you know, there's things to seize on and to watch and to really, really support these, especially these congressmen who are trying to continue here, and also, you know, hoping President Trump gets the information, understand what he's looking at, and, you know, is not part of it. You know, hope that he really is the real deal and that he will do something about it. We just haven't seen this, so a lot is ahead of us.
Yeah, and I know we spoke about Sessions in the past, but can we trust under Sessions at this point that anything will come of any criminal evidence found on these even on laptops or anything else that's discovered? Will we see any indictments? McCabe, Strzok, Orr, Comey, Mueller? I mean, because if nothing happens with all this being exposed, I think that the American voters going to lose complete confidence in.
I would, yeah.
You know,
I would, yes. I think rightly so. Yes, I mean, as long as these figures remain in their jobs, I mean, we still have McCabe, we still have Rod Rosenstein, we still have these players who are very, very deeply, to say the least, have conflicts of interest in all these affairs, whether it's Mueller and Comey's long-term long-term relationship, you know, in terms of their mentoring and friendship, in terms of Rod Rosenstein's involvement in the original uranium corruption matter. I mean, we just have a plethora of non-independent personages in these incredibly important watchdog roles. And Sessions presides over the top of this. So, no, as long as we have that cadre at the top, we aren't going to see action at the Justice Department unless the Congress is able to demand it. And, you know, that's very difficult. It is very difficult. We will see. But the deck is stacked. It remains stacked against us and against the truth really coming out and against the law working correctly. So it's a really, really dangerous, fascinating moment, but it could go so easily go south. And, you know, that's why the heat really has to stay on these matters. And again, I just can't endorse more the idea of an independent counsel to look into that whole mechanism of the FISA court. And if indeed it was the Steele dossier, it's something we, the American people, need to know and need to understand how it is these very shadowy figures play in our presidential politics behind, you know, the curtain of anonymity and so on. And we're starting to see some of them dragged into the light, you know, whether it's Glenn Simpson, whether it's Bruce Orr, whether it's Nellie Orr and others, and Peter Strzok, of course, who we've spoke about before. And by all appearances, it's a terrible distortion of the way our system is supposed to work. And so we're sort of at this moment where are we going to, it's like a little tail poking up, are we going to be able to pull it out and see it, or is it just going to disappear? And so once again, we're at one of these really dangerous crossroads. So we'll see, but I just hope people stay interested and focused on it, just because I think it sort of is more important. I can't think of a more important story at the moment, even with all the chaos and danger in the world, right here at home, right here in the workings of law and order and blind justice and no one being above the law. Right here, this is sort of the crux of it, and if we lose it, we really have lost that essence of our republic. It's just gone. So, important.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't. Diana, where can listeners follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including American Betrayal?
Oh, yes. This would be at dianawest.net, and everything is there. And I'm so, you know, American Betrayal is actually quite a primer for understanding how governments are subverted. Our government was subverted, and the idea that it stopped, the idea that it doesn't exist, the idea that it's all over is very naive and foolhardy as I continue to learn. It is harder to see because they get better at it.
Well, I highly recommend, you know what, listeners, not just for yourself, but purchase it for a friend or a family member for the new year. To get them started to know exactly what's going on, and maybe they'll be able to inform others to stay interested. And, of course, I'll have those links also for your social media, Diana, in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and right under the show description, you'll find the links that Diana shared. Thanks so much again, Diana, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your next visit to the show. And until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Bye, Audrey.